This week's episode of Greetings from Storybrook is brought to you by Dog Boy, Danger on Liberty Pier by Bill Meeks, a new superhero adventure. Sometimes the murder isn't the mystery. Find out more at dogboyadventures.com. Greetings from Storybrook. I'm Bill Meeks, and Anne-Marie isn't here again. Apologies. But this is another little special episode we're putting out in the lead up to Once coming back next week. Are you guys excited? I'm excited. I'm super excited. I am wickedly excited for Once to come back on Sunday. But basically, this is an interview that me and Anne-Marie did a couple months back for a website called Lythris. We got an email from Emma over there at lythris.com. Let me get the correct spelling here for you. We'll have a link in the show notes at greetingsfromstorybrook.com too. But it's Lythris, Lythrus.com. And it was a really long, far-reaching interview where we went over, you know, our thoughts on Once, how we came up with the podcast, what it's been like, you know, interacting with you guys over the past year and a half or however long we've been doing this. And it's hopefully it'll be enjoyable and a little something to get you excited for Sunday. Speaking of Sunday, we'll actually be back on Saturday night. Late Saturday night, we'll post our Wonderland recap for Greetings from Wonderland as a separate feed, or just it'll come out over on the regular Greetings from Storybrook feed, too. Yeah, I should probably plan what I'm going to say when I record these, right? One thing I want to mention before we get into the episode is that my novel, Dog Boy, Danger on Liberty Pier, is available, and we have a couple of promo codes for you guys. Now, I gave the promo code for free books yesterday, and they're already all gone. I'll be opening up a couple more free copies on Sunday, or rather Monday when we record the episode. But if you use the coupon code GREETINGSFROMSTORYBROOK2 at bit.ly/oncedogboy, you can get 99 cents off the book. Basic premise of the book, Dog Boy is Culta City's 13-year-old superhero, and when he sees a murder on Liberty Pier, he has to launch a hunt to find the killer. But it turns out, in this case, the murder isn't the biggest mystery. It's a lot of fun superhero adventure, young adult novel, and if you want to check it out, like I said, go to bit.ly/oncedogboy and use the promo code the promo code is greetings2. Yeah, and if you want to check out that book or Den of Thieves, and we have some other ones coming out shortly, you can check those out at dogboyadventures.com. Well, I guess we'll go ahead and get into the main content of the episode, and I'll pop back in at the end to say hi.
All right. Well, first question then, if you want to dive into this, is okay. Pretty much what made you choose a podcast to express your fandom? That's not a route many people take.
Well, we had initially been looking into doing a Doctor Who podcast. We were going to call it The Companions. It was going to be because we were looking for a good podcast to do together.
Yeah, and we've been trying actually for a couple years to find a podcast to do.
Yeah, and we were going to do the Doctor Who one, and then a good friend of mine, Justin Robert Young, decided to start one, you know.
With his girlfriend.
Yeah, we hadn't said anything. Yeah, no, it's called Who's the Boss? It's on the Frog Pants Network. But, you know, we didn't want to step on his toes. And then I was getting into Once Upon a Time, and I told Anne-Marie, you know, you should definitely check it out.
And I laughed at him.
And she kept putting
her
off.
For about 6 months.
Yeah.
And then I marathoned it all in a week.
And
I was addicted.
Then after that, you know, I think that was right at the end of season one, right?
Yeah, when we got there was caught like up. 3 episodes left.
Yeah, and so then, you know, we finished it out together, and then over the course of the summer, we just decided, hey, why don't we start a podcast? So we sat down. If you go back and listen to the zero episode, I actually used a little field recorder I used for some of my video work, and we just sat down at the kitchen table, and that was basically how it ran for, I don't know, the first month or so?
At least.
Yeah, and then we eventually – I had all the professional audio equipment. It was just easier for us just to sit down, hit record, and go.
Right.
But once we kind of found our voice with it and kind of had a good structure for how to organize our thoughts for the episode and everything, we moved over to the professional equipment. But, yeah, like I said, you know, the podcasting thing was really just a matter of us wanting to do a podcast and happening to fall in love with Once Upon a Time right. at the same time.
Well, we both were kind of involved with podcasters. Like, mm-hmm. he's very close with a lot of people on Twit and Frog Pants.
Twit and Frog Pants, etc.
And I was addicted to a podcast called Manic Mommies, where I was like, yes, I should be doing this. And I couldn't find anybody to do that with me, so I just did this.
Well, that sort of kind of segues nicely into the next question, which was, how did you become a Oncer and what drew you to the show? So you obviously did not start day one with episode one.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had heard the kind of the basic premise of Once Upon a Time, like right before it was about to start airing. And it really reminded me of a comic book series called Fables by Bill Willingham. And I had known that ABC had been working with DC Comics and Bill to try and come up with a Fables series, and it had kind of got stalled, and it never worked out. And then the next season, they had this Once Upon a Time show, which had a very similar premise, you know, fairy tale characters transported to live in a small insular community in the modern world. And so I was I didn't want to watch the show because I was like, oh, they're just ripping off Fables. And then I saw an interview with Bill Willingham, like the creator of Fables, on Comic Book Resources, where he said that the creators of the show had actually approached him because they knew the concepts were so similar, to kind of get his blessing on it. And this was, you know, probably 4 or 5 episodes into the first season. So he was he had been told who Graham was, and he said that was super duper interesting, and that was basically. You know, a reason to watch it, if nothing else, which I almost wonder if maybe they didn't change plans, you know, halfway through. Because, you know, The Woodsman is interesting, but not really, really interesting.
Yeah, he had to have been.
Like, a lot of people were thinking.
A lot of people over the course of the show.
A lot of people were thinking he was going to be the big bad wolf. And I know the creators have also talked that they were going to put Sherlock in. Or they wanted to. Thinking about putting Sherlock in. I think they said maybe Graham was going to be maybe
that's what it was.
I almost want to say I remember hearing that.
I feel like that story has come up before, yes.
Yeah, but basically, I got the creator's permission to enjoy Once Upon a Time, so I checked out a couple episodes and fell in love with Rumpelstiltskin. And
yes, you did.
And I think we already basically covered yours.
Yeah, that was me, but he kind of sold me with Jenny Goodwin. Because I loved Big Love. Like, I got really addicted to that because I marathon shows. So I, like, watch entire series really quick.
Seems to be the trend these days.
It is the trend, you know, thanks to the Netflix and Amazon. So, yeah. That at least got me to watch it. And then when she was Snow White, that made it even better.
Is there any particular episode which she said, okay, this is it, I'm done for. I'm a huge fan.
It was probably episode one. Let's just be honest. I get sucked in really quick.
Yeah, and for me, probably episode one, too. Really, what really hooked me into the series was Rumpel himself. Like, Rumpel... Well, it was like the first episode, Rumpel/Mr. Gold kind of like bugged me, but in a good way, and I was sticking with it. And then by the time I got to the third episode, he just completely won me over. And he was, for a big part of season one, he was why I watched the series. And I mean, that's become less so as he's become
well
more of a good guy, and he's also become a lot more sympathetic. And the more interesting characters are the ones that have issues, and they're slowly.
Oh, he's got issues. He has issues. There's plenty of issues.
But they're very slowly shaving them away for him. And who knows? Maybe this Sunday, he'll be completely resolved.
I've heard that rumor. Yeah. It's interesting because I remember the first few episodes. The person who actually hooked me was the evil queen. And I completely lost interest in her when she started getting redeemed in the second season.
It was boring.
It was.
I really struggle with her. Like, I want to love to hate her, but right now I'm just a little meh.
Well, with the second season, too, they were trying to do a redemption arc, but it kind of seemed like... They just wouldn't commit to it. It was like one episode she would be on the path to redemption, the next one she'd be back to her old ways, and it went back and forth like that three or four times.
But when she went back to her old ways, they weren't good. Mm-hmm. They weren't like the quality evil queen.
It almost weakened her set quite a bit with that arc. She seemed a little wishy-washy, and it wasn't really until the season finale that I felt like, okay, we might be making some progress again with this character.
Yeah, and that's even happened a bit this season. Like, actually, this past Sunday's episode. Because the distrust she had of Emma after everything they went through in Neverland, it was like, come on.
Got off the boat.
Be a little consistent. She might still have some little jealousy there, but you guys just teamed up and, put aside your differences towards a common goal. You had a big victory.
Right.
Trust her a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I actually quit watching for a little bit at the beginning of this new season because that first episode had all the old animosity back out. And I said, I thought we fixed this. I thought we were past this. I don't want to watch another season of this. And then I was told two episodes later that they pretty much resolved it and moved forward again. And I started tuning back in. But...
And now we've gone backwards again.
Yeah.
Goes back and forth and back and forth.
But I mean,
forever.
That's how any real relationship's going to go. You can't completely wipe everything away. And in the grand scheme of things, has it even been a year?
This is true.
We're 2.5 seasons in, and Henry the actor has aged like 3 years. Henry the character has aged about a year. So
I think that's interesting because I actually have it headcanoned that it's been at least 2 years.
Well, that's what I did, too, until it was pointed out to me, because I said something on the podcast, and people really like to correct us. Like, we get, seven emails anytime something we say is wrong or they think is wrong.
Which we welcome.
Of course.
Yeah.
I like to be called out, because half the time we're like, okay, we don't remember this, so if you could send us a link.
Help us sound less stupid.
Yes.
That's actually what we should probably start the podcast with, everyone.
Right. Hi, greetings from Story Rec. Help us sound less stupid.
But you were saying about Henry?
Oh, it's just, like, I think just seeing the physical aspects has made me feel like it's gone longer, but it hasn't, which is a problem.
Yeah. See, actually, in one of the theories I've been talking about on the podcast, I kind of think at this point with the body swap and everything, that they might be planning on having Robbie Kay play Henry going forward. That's kind of my little pet theory right now, or the actor who plays Peter Pan right now, that they might have him playing Henry going forward because he's like 17, 18, something like that.
Yeah, his looks aren't going to change that drastically.
Yeah, for, realistically, the
5 years.
Lifetime of the show might be another 2 seasons, maybe 3.
Don't be a negative man.
No, that's not – 5 or 6 seasons is really, really good. So
I like things with 9 seasons.
You never want it to end.
Exactly.
Well, and I think that would be an interesting way to go because after having seen them doing it for a while, I don't think Jared Gilmore channels Pan really well. I think he channels evil really well, but not necessarily Pan. But I do think Robbie Kay is actually doing a good job channeling Henry.
Yeah.
Yeah, like actually, I thought Henry as Pan, well, not exactly like Pan, was a lot better than his general performances. I don't know if that's because, it's villain, so it's meatier, or if, maybe he worked with Robbie Kay a bit to kind of...
Oh, I'm sure they did.
...get a little bit of that impression going on. And, a lot of times, a younger actor working really closely with a more experienced or a better actor can just have, a magnitude of help in improvement and everything.
Well, I'm actually going to grab that again and try and pull it back to some of the scripted questions.
Sure.
You guys have talked about having backgrounds in theater and how that affects how you watch the show. How much do you think it ultimately affects how you watch anything? Is that background knowledge a major thing?
Constantly. I can't put it out of my head. It was 6 years and a college degree. Yeah. So it's always there. Mm-hmm. I can hear my professors like in my head criticizing them because, well, theater professors are very flamboyant. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They all were.
Yes.
They all were.
Their personalities.
Their personalities are very large and their opinions are twice as large. Mm-hmm. So I just hear them criticizing when something's weird or gets skipped or – like, I could even hear them going, they dropped a line. I could just hear it. Some things that just aren't believable would be like, commit!
And oddly, even almost conversely, I think sometimes it helps us be a little bit more forgiving of certain things, too.
Yes.
Because, you know, I mean, it's a matter of scale. We weren't exactly on ABC on Sunday nights or anything. But, you know, we've been there. So. Yeah. So, you know, if someone has a bad episode or something like that, or I don't know, a script, and especially with me doing some writing and stuff too, like, you know, if a plot doesn't tie together as quickly, you can excuse a little bit because you can kind of, you can put yourself in the place of the person or the artist,
right?
You know, as they're doing it, and you're like, okay, well, you know, they probably still did their best.
Right.
It just, they were having an off day.
They didn't have to work with,
or they needed to get, in the case of a script or something, they needed to get the script in by 5. So it was just easier to do the shorthand kind of crappy line instead of trying to do something clever.
Like, but
yeah, I did. And plus the costuming, you know, it helps with the, analyzing the costuming.
Oh, if we could live in fairy tale land, I would be the happiest person ever. I was so excited to see Snow's, like, I keep calling it a warrior outfit, but it's really not a warrior outfit. I don't know. A woods outfit.
With the Uggs?
She didn't have Uggs.
She has Uggs and a fur vest.
This wasn't that one. This was the white leather.
Oh, okay. Okay.
The white leather with the studs.
Oh, okay.
Better.
Although, a few weeks ago, I forget what episode it was, but wasn't it like, they just seemed very focused on Regina's cleavage for some reason. Like,
you were focused on Regina's
cleavage. No, it was like, there were three different outfits, three different timelines or something, and everyone was like super low cut.
Where it just kept getting lower and lower and lower.
And you were like, did someone lose a bet? or something?
Yeah, it was risque almost. But anyway, yes, theater does affect every aspect of us watching the show.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I'd actually kind of wondered is occasionally I think from a more casual viewer standpoint, it's easy for us to get caught up in the characters because the actors are so good that even when they have an off week with their character arc, their acting is so impressive. Mm-hmm. Robert Carlyle, I think, is the best example of that. It doesn't really matter how little sense his character arc is making. He's great to watch.
Oh, yeah. He's a pro.
Oh, yeah.
And I could see that the theater background really helping you pick up on the fact that he's struggling. He's got nothing, and he's just having to do it all himself.
You can kind of tell, and this is going to sound bad, but the more professional and experienced actors, even within the show, just even facial expressions and verbal, you know, accents or whatever.
Yeah.
You can tell who's been around the block and who's new.
Yeah.
Of any age.
And, you know, one thing I'd like to point out just before we get out of theater land is that it's actually funny because me and Anne-Marie actually met doing a play about a fairy tale about Hansel and Gretel. She was the Lydia the Gypsy,
the beach,
the witch, and I was the stage manager. So
I don't remember.
So I don't know. Maybe we're always destined to do a Once Upon a Time podcast.
Well, didn't you play my husband in one too? We
did
5 different fairy tale things because we did like touring children's shows.
Yeah.
So
was it King Thrushbeard?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there was the fisherman. And
was the one line I did that was just like really loud and bombastic and crazy?
I don't remember.
Beautiful lady. Something like that.
All I can see is like, wasn't Ross throwing fish at me at some point?
I think so. Yeah.
Sorry. We do this.
We were walking down memory lane.
you have to pull us back when we get in the theater world.
I did a stage coup in college, so it's fun to hear the stories.
Yeah.
And I still have moments when I'm watching Once where I'm going, I hate glitter.
I remember the one time we tore up the stage at our college, and two years prior, we had done a Rocky Horror Show production, and people brought glitter every night, and we thought we had it all, and then the stage came off up in pieces to where you could kind of clean out under it. And one day, Mita, the technical director, had us lift all the pieces out, and we found like a ton of glitter. Like 2 years later, we were still finding glitter in that place.
God, love glitter.
It's great, but the aftermath of it isn't so great.
Yeah,
it's like New Year's Eve. Gorgeous. New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve.
It's kind of like New Year's Eve.
Okay. There are numerous Once podcasts out there. We've talked about a few of the things, but what do you feel makes your podcast most unique, besides the rhyming opening?
That's all there is, isn't it? No.
Yeah, I kind of check out after we do those.
Some days. No. I think we're more casual in a good way.
Yeah, that's...
like we're professional but casual all at the same time. And I get the impression that people like that about us.
Yeah, we especially the past like month or so, we've been hearing that a lot. Just because kind of like we're casual and laid back, and I guess a lot of the other podcasts have been getting like, I mean we're getting set up into camps with like the shipping and everything, but yes. You know, we're not really serious about
no.
it. It's just very lighthearted, and no. I think Swan another
fire forever.
Captain Swan
hashtag
Team Bill Meeks
hashtag Team Amory.
No, but I think another thing that makes our podcast kind of unique from all of the other podcasts out there is that we're kind of approaching it from two different directions too. Like me, as I mentioned earlier, I'm a big comic book fan. I really like alternate universes and metafiction and mashing characters together in interesting ways and everything. And Anne-Marie is more...
I like pretty things.
Yeah, and you like soap opera. Kind of.
I don't... Well, I actually do not like soap opera.
Yeah, I want like to say soap opera.
I like pop culture. I like, you know... Primetime TV.
Yeah, you like primetime network TV dramas.
Yes, and this is like rolled up in a package sprinkled with glitter.
So, you know, we both come at it from completely different directions, which means, you know, we notice different things. And it kind of a lot of times it takes us to very unique places that other people might not go when they're all coming at it from, I don't know, being a big fan of fairy tale. Like, I think a lot of the Once Upon a Time podcasts are coming at it from either being fans of Lost that the creators worked on previously, or big Disney fans.
Allow me, I'm a big Disney fan.
Yeah. I mean, who isn't a big Disney fan? Come on, right?
Right.
But I mean, Walt Disney's one of my personal heroes, like top three. But you know, I think that, you know, it brings a certain viewpoint and a lot of time a certain bias to it, and a lot of times the host are in agreement on that bias.
Right, where which makes it a really extreme opinion of the podcast, where we actually almost go out of our way to have, opposite opinions on things. Or we'll play devil's advocate. Even if we agree with them, we're going to be like, nope, you're wrong. Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, convince each other of our points, right. You know, things like that.
We like to argue.
But in a friendly way.
Of course.
Well, you do it without a lot of the negativity that you get from a great deal of the Once fandom, where if something doesn't go the way you wanted it to go, you kind of just shrug it off and move on.
The shipping war is going to end ugly, though. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. I mean, some of our listeners have been even getting a little personal with the shipping war, even though they know we're joking about it.
I think they were even joking. It's just, you can only say so much on Twitter.
Yeah, and
even it's, rapid fire Twitter.
And we still haven't come up with the universal sarcasm, like,
symbol,
punctuation mark or something. Right. So it's a little hard to say that
way.
You can't
italicize something, which is really frustrating. I like italics.
So you brought up the shipper war that you guys have actually taken sides on. Can you briefly kind of explain where you come from with each of those? What makes you think that that's the right route to go?
I will give the floor to Anne-Marie first to defend her wrong opinion.
I love love Balefire. I love his scruffiness. I don't know. He just makes me warm and fuzzy. I want to see him end with the mama. And I mean, I love Captain Hook. The first episode, I could not wait for Captain Hook. One of my main points, and this sticks out in my head, showing how I'm more the pop culture person, was Guyliner. In like all caps. Like, I love everything about Hook, but sorry, you actually belong with like Tinkerbell or something in my head.
Yeah, I like Bay too, for sure.
I know.
I just think that, you know, Bay had his chance, and I think
no one deserves a second chance.
But the decisions he made in regards to Emma in August, and the way everything went down in Tallahassee, I don't know if he does. And I mean, they were good together, but they weren't good for each other. They didn't make each other the best people they could be. They made each other bad people by being together.
We're going to agree to disagree on this.
And I think they've both moved on. They've both become very good people in their own right, very strong people.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I just think that, you know, Captain Hook being ready to move on from Mila now after he's given up his whole revenge thing, which is a really good.
I am happy with that. I'm very happy with that.
And I mean, you know, him and Emma definitely have some chemistry.
Maybe Rapunzel will be his chemistry.
Or Tank. Never, she says, this week.
Never Tank.
But yeah, I don't know. I just think they work well together. And I think a Bay and Emma, a return to a Bay and Emma relationship is doomed to fail and doomed to be probably toxic for both of them.
I think it needs explored more at the very least.
But as we said, you know, we both enjoy the other character.
I'm
a big fan of Bay. She's a big fan of Captain Hook. So, you know, we have our teams, but we're.
We'll be supportive in the end.
We'll be happy for Emma, whatever she decides.
Exactly. Sure. And I think one of my favorite parts is that the actors of Hook and Bay are like tight.
Mm-hmm.
Like you always see them. I think Comic-Con, one of what's his face? Lost a bet and had to wear a silly hat during their panel.
I've seen like tweeted hilarious pictures of them like on set, like walking around.
Right.
And stuff, holding hands.
They go out with Grumpy. Like they all go to the bar and watch sports. I like that. I like that the actors are close. I think it actually makes it a better. It brings more to your acting. Again, bringing the theater background, you can like can't peel it away like a shadow.
Yeah, because you trust each other more.
Yes,
and you can
take those chances when you trust somebody more.
Yeah,
I'm actually kind of disappointed that we went straight into them actually doing the shipping war and we didn't get to see more of them interacting nicely as characters. I think they have
such a history that we still don't know.
Yeah.
I want backstory. I'm glad we're out of Neverland, but gosh darn it, I want backstory.
Do you think there's a timeline on the shipping wars that we'll see an answer by the end of next segment or
who knows?
I have a feeling that we're going to get some indication in the season finale, but that they're going to play it out all next season because it's been really good for them.
Yeah.
Like on the social medias and everything.
Yeah.
Like everyone is invested in the shipping war. And the thing
we weren't shippers.
Yeah. Well, the thing is when we started the whole,
ship war
on our podcast, it wasn't a thing yet. It was just, I think there was like a glance or a line or something.
Yes.
Like in the first or second episode, I can't remember the exact moment, but and we just thought, I think we just
took sides by like nature.
Yeah, and then the next week it built up more built up more, and then it became the biggest thing in one span.
Right, basically. Well, that's because they didn't have any Evil Queen stuff to do. So
yeah, but it was just kind of surprising how it kind of all exploded, built up like
after
that.
We'd already started.
We hadn't intended it to, but
I don't think
it's
it
been
was
fun.
Us.
It's been a lot
I don't
of fun.
I think it was us. We're not that big.
No, I mean, we hadn't intended to make it a big part of our podcast.
Oh, yeah. It just became fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you mentioned the Evil Queen, so taking a look at our villains. The villains have always been Rumpelstiltskin, Evil Queen, Peter Pan, kind of the characters everyone really loves in a.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Love to hate type way. What's the recipe once it's got going, do you think, on the villains to make it? Because they aren't all as sympathetic as some of them are.
Yeah, like Pan, you've really not been able to find a.
Mm-mm.
There's not a nice bone in his body.
Well, I think that might almost be the formula, is maybe to introduce a villain and have them stick around for like half a season, and you think they're just the evilest person you've ever seen. And then you kind of dive into the backstory.
In the backstory, you see how they became that way.
And you can kind of, if you don't understand it, or, you know, if you don't, I don't know, promote it or endorse it, you at least empathize with it.
Yeah.
You understand, like it from the Killing Joke, Batman the Killing Joke, the last big line from the Joker, all that separates me from you, the Joker says to Batman, is one bad day. And, you know, basically what we get is we get to see, you know, that big bombastic, I don't know, Heath Ledger in the Dark Knight Joker thing for the first half season. And then the second half of the season, we get to see that one bad day and get some context why the villains are how
became
they are.
A villain.
Yeah. And sometimes redemption and then non-redemption and then redemption again. And then
redemption. Well, I think one of the things that I found interesting is they manage, even when you're kind of going, well, you're still wrong. You kind of understood where they were coming from. Rumpel with the curse to find Bay. I honestly didn't really buy the vendetta against Snow from the Evil Queen until Snow did the stunt with her mom. At that point, I was like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was my top moment of season two, just because of the, I don't even know how to say it without cursing. just the messed up nature of it. That might be one of my big, like, just like powerful moments of the series. That might be my number one, just because it's one thing to, you know, hatch a plot to take down an evil, Cora, the evil queen mother or whatever. It's another thing to trick her daughter into killing her. And actually,
and have Snow White do it.
Yes!
I kind of feel like we still should get, she still has some karmatic return or something coming from that.
Maybe
just
she won't be able to.
I thought they dropped that plot line personally. We started with the darkened heart, but it seems to be gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely feels that way.
But it was mentioned, or maybe it was a preview or something about her darkened heart this season.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember like a conversation between her and Emma where it was basically, I've done some things too, you know, kind of implying that situation. But the thing with morality in the show is it's all completely relative, because all of these characters are from kind of like a medieval European world. So, I mean, their idea of morality is completely different than ours. Like, back then, you know, beheading someone wasn't an immoral act. That wouldn't necessarily get you thrown in jail.
Right.
Just
depending on who you beheaded.
Yeah, you know, in our society, a little boy kissing a little girl on the cheek can land him in hot water. You know, it's all relative, too.
It is interesting because I struggle with the shipping wars, because I get a little hung up on how old those guys are when you actually stop to think about it. And the fact that we really don't know how Neverland worked, if it was like the curse where they basically repeated the same day, or if they've literally lived 300 years.
Mm-hmm.
But they're from the Enchanted Forest. That's not really something that is going to be raising red flags for someone like David or Snow necessarily as these relationships play out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although I think we all have to agree that Rumpel still seems a little too old for Belle.
I
yes.
At no the matter risk how you of should. The hate mail, I do agree with that.
Yes. Well, I don't know what's going on with her. Like, he was only gone a week, and she needs to go shopping. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you've been a little critical of her story.
It was horrendous.
Choices.
This week, the beret. No one should wear a beret. She's an
maid. Set up a barrier spell and she can't go anymore.
She didn't even feel she could do it until like seven people,
I'm just saying she can't go shopping.
No.
So seven people, dwarfs, so 3.5 people then.
3.5 people headed to her. No, you can do it.
We're talking fairy tale dwarfs, not real life dwarfs.
Right.
Real life dwarfs are whole people.
Of course. Anyway, sorry.
You can cut that out if you
Well, we are coming up on the last episode of the season. Mm-hmm. Here after one more. So we've seen a few previews, but not much. Do you have any theories about where it's going to end, what they're going to try and do with the next season? At this point, I'm assuming people who are listening to this have watched the show. That's concurrent. So.
Yeah, if not, they've been completely spoiled.
If not, they shouldn't be listening to it. Always keep current, people. I think they're going back to Fairy Tale Land. I want them back in Fairy Tale Land. I know that there are pictures out there of people in Fairy Tale Land that no one will send me a link to. Hi, that's you. Can you send me a link to these pictures? I want to see them all there because they actually have all thrived there. So even the people who ran away or aren't in a sense, originally from there.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Emma went back, she did good in Fairy Tale Land.
Yeah.
When Bay got thrown back there, he snapped right back into, like, he left when he was 14. He should, like, it shouldn't all still be right there, but he was like, blood magic, I got this. Do, 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 and, like, he fit right in.
Maybe, you know, the Enchanted Forest, by its very nature, the good guys end up winning. You know, where our world, it's a bit more, or a bit less clear cut.
Yeah.
And yeah, I definitely think we're probably going to be seeing a lot of characters returning to Fairy Tale Land too. With the curse, I know it's going to get altered in some way.
Right.
My best guess right now is that everyone's going to go back to Fairy Tale Land and they're not going to remember their Storybrooke lives. And then it's going to be a half season of Emma being the only one who remembers everything. Trying to convince them.
There will be a new book.
Yeah, no. a Storybrooke book.
Okay. See.
Well, wouldn't it be Henry? Wouldn't it go back to Henry being the only one? Because he's the only one who was born here.
Oh.
This is true, yeah. But see, Emma never had another persona, though, either. You know, she never had it. So maybe they might create one for her like they did for all the Storybrooke characters.
Oh, she'll get a fairy tale like personality.
Yeah, like she'll just remember Snow and Charming having been in the castle, being her parents, being the king and queen or whatever for 30 years. She won't remember all the bad stuff, and then Henry will make her remember, and she'll be like, "I wish you weren't my son anymore because I didn't want to remember that."
I'd love to see Jennifer Morrison trying to be a princess for an entire.
That would be hilarious. Like,
well, didn't one of the promo pics for this this season have her in kind of a princess dress?
It was a snow dress. It was Snow's dress.
The ones they yanked.
Mm-hmm.
It was Snow's dress from the previous year.
The ones they put up for like 3 seconds and then realized that all of Tumblr had them beat already before they even started.
They were horrendous. Horrendous. Anyway, sorry.
They fixed it.
Thankfully.
Yeah, but that's the big theory. I don't know. I guess it really all depends on what happens with Pan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it all depends on what happens with Pan. You know, because if he makes it through this Sunday's episode, then it could be anything.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't, then it's probably just going to be dealing with the aftermath of what he did and whatever the new big bads are doing. Which we have got some casting. I forget the actress's name, but they've said she's going to be playing a pretty major villain.
Yeah.
So,
but who that villain is, we have no idea.
Yeah, some people have been saying the Wicked Witch of the West, which if they do Oz,
oh,
yes, please.
Basically.
I've actually thought maybe it might be like a young Maleficent or something.
Maleficent's not that old, though.
Yeah, Maleficent wasn't that old, but I mean, she was older. She was like 40s. And maybe, I don't know, maybe some with her being transformed into the dragon, being stuck in Storybrooke, being brought back and everything. Maybe somehow it de-ages her. You know, anything could happen.
Anything could happen.
Or it could just be flashbacks, Shen Maleficent. But everyone's saying Wicked Witch of the West, and I don't want to be like everyone else, so I'm saying Young Maleficent.
See, that's interesting. The only theory I've heard up until now has been Cruella de Vil.
I can see that,
especially since Pongo's in Storybrooke.
Oh, poor Pongo!
I think it was the fact that she's supposed to have her own theme song, and everyone just went straight to the Cruella de Vil song.
Oh, she has a theme song?
Oh, did they mention that?
Yeah, she's supposed to... something about she's got her own theme song, and you can't read into it whether she has her own theme song in the show or if she had her own theme song in whatever she...
was previous.
If it's whatever she was in previously, that pretty much narrows it down to Cruella de Vil.
Yeah.
Cruella de Vil.
Okay, see, this is...
We always sing on the podcast.
And we really don't plan it, ever. I've also heard that she might be Mother Gothel, I think it is, from Rapunzel. But I'm not sure if that's just a Tangled character or not.
Well, we've seen from the Wonderland show that they're not afraid to bring Disney-only villains in because they brought Jafar in. So.
Can we not talk Wonderland?
We'll not talk Wonderland.
Thank you.
And unless she asks us about it, and then of course we'll have to.
Please don't ask me about Wonderland.
I have not actually watched Wonderland. I have been kind of waiting to have the whole picture and then dive into it, like you're saying, and kind of binge watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're good.
Too many spinoffs that didn't quite hold water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been doing a separate podcast episode for it every week all season, and we've just it's been kind of middling. Like, there's been some really great episodes.
There's the one been with the really cat great moments.
Yeah,
there have not been complete good episodes.
I think the only thing I've heard that I know I want to watch more is Jafar. So
hit or miss.
When he's wearing I forget the name of the actual garment, but the gown thing.
Yeah.
He just stands weird, and it's like he's trying to be intimidating, but it's not intimidating. It just kind of looks like he's just kind of, I don't know. He's all hunched over and everything. It's a little weird. Like when there was a couple episodes where he went to Alice's homeworld. And he was dressed in just like a business suit, and he was
awesome in a suit.
He was smarmy, he was intimidating, he was great.
Yes.
But for some reason,
he can't wear glitter.
Yeah, well, I think it's just the actor. I think maybe he just doesn't know how to work in
a dress.
A flowy gown.
Then he's not a good actor, because every actor has to wear drag.
Well, see, I was actually...
Or is that just our school?
But I actually started rewatching Lost last night because I watched the first season and never got any farther back when it first aired. And the actor who plays Jafar in Wonderland, he plays Saeed in Lost. And I was loving him in Lost.
That's actually why I wanted to see it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remembered liking him in the series too. And I think I don't know. I think it was just a mismatch. I think it was just a situation where they had an actor that they really liked and they had a history with and they worked with who was of Middle Eastern descent. And so when it came time to cast Jafar,
he also influenced that they even had Jafar?
This is very true, too. Although I will say that other Lost cast members, Jorge Garcia as Tiny.
Ah, Jorge!
Perennial favorite around here.
Yeah.
Anytime he shows up is great. He hasn't been in this season.
I think he had a brief moment in time.
Did he?
I don't remember.
Yeah. They've barely been in Storybrooke this season.
Right. Anyway, sorry.
No, I started watching the show because of Robert Carlyle and what he'd done in Stargate, and I still keep looking at him going, I came for you, and you are not anywhere close to what you were in Stargate. But I'm still here.
He's entertaining enough that even if you're not enjoying what he's doing, you still have to watch it. You absolutely have to watch it. Yeah, I haven't. I never saw him in Stargate. Like, actually, once was my introduction to him. I need to go back and check out Stargate and some of the. Didn't he do a lot of like more indie movies back in the late 90s, early 2000s, something like that? I think I remember seeing that on his IMDb. I need to go back and check those out too.
The only other thing I've seen him in actually was the movie adaptation of Eragon.
Oh, okay.
And. That actually is more akin to Gold than his Stargate run, all painted up and over.
Oh, I'd imagine, because that's like high fantasy, like dragons or something, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and he was playing a shade or something, so
Nice. Sorry, I just kicked Anne-Marie.
Yeah. Abuse!
Is there a different spinoff you guys would like to see the show maybe look at? Go ahead and wrap up Wonderland and...
Actually, Oz.
Oz
would probably be the best, because Oz was always one of my favorite book series growing up. Not just The Wizard of Oz, but the whole series of books, the whole world. And there's such a – like versus Neverland, where it's Peter, the pirates, the mermaids, the Indians, you're done. Oz is just expansive. Think of the most like detailed, rich world you can think of. Like, I don't know, like a Lord of the Rings or something, where there's like history books written about, you know, a minor character in book 3. And that's Oz. And, I mean, there were shorter books. It was on a smaller scale because it was meant for children. But it's just like one of the most dense. I think if they did a spinoff on Oz,
it could go longer than the main one series. If they brought Oz into the main one series, they could ride Oz probably until the end of the series. There's so much material there.
But
past Oz, I would really like to see them explore Dr. Frankenstein's black and white world a little bit more, which might actually tie into Oz with a couple of name drops we got there. Like, actually, one of the main things we talked about last... They mentioned a wizard. They mentioned slippers at some point.
No, that was this season. Oh, that was this season. It was a portal.
There was like an off to see the wizard line. Frankenstein episode. Yeah. I'd like to see that world, and that could definitely transition in Oz because you know Dorothy lived in a black and white world too.
Right.
So maybe that could be the B to get us from A to C. You know, is Frankenstein's world.
Yeah, because that was a lot of early speculation was actually that Will was Oz.
And I mean, he still could be because, as we all know, Once Upon a Time has a penchant for taking one character and turning them into seven.
I was about to say seven. Tick tock, tick.
Yeah, speaking of that, grown and shifted a lot since the very first episode. Were there favorite plots? Character stories, general arcs you either really liked or some that you kind of wish they hadn't done?
Well, you know, just as far as overall impression of the episode, I think probably still stands in our mind as probably the biggest disappointment is probably the Tallahassee episode, the flashback episode with Emma and Neil. I mean, given the context that we got later, finding out Neil was Balefire and everything, it makes it a little better.
Right.
But I think that's really the only episode we've, like...
hated
just
on.
Just absolutely... I think we even called the episode Hater Aid.
We did.
Yeah.
We did.
For some reason, it just did not jive with us at all. I think part of it, too, was we had been building up a lot of expectations for it in our head, and it just...
You mean sort of like when he opened the thing on his bike, and it was a type that I know you're Balefire?
Yeah, the
people
most on the...
that!
I know!
It was horrible!
And that was, like, the most on-the-nose way you could reveal that. Like, it could have been a drawing of the dagger.
Storybook!
Street carnival caricature of Rumpelstiltskin.
Anything else. Literally
anything
else
but a typewriter saying, I know you're Balefire, you whatever.
Yes. Or if it would have been on like a postcard from something, a fairy tale even.
Yeah.
Because he's obviously aware.
Or like if he opened it and it was like a copy of Grimm's Fairy Tales.
Yes.
That would have been great.
That would have been
That would have been subtle.
No, it wanted to smack you in the face.
But as far as positive stuff, I'd say probably actually the snow moment we discussed where she tricked Regina into killing her mom. I just from like kind of moment, that's probably one of my most favorite moments from the series. And I've really liked Pan this season. One, because he's a really, really dark, challenging, threatening villain, and two, he's a really good adaptation of Peter Pan. Spiritually, he is the Peter Pan from the book. It's just we're viewing the story from the perspective of the adult characters, and you know, to an adult, you know, we're all grown adults here. A boy acting that way would seem like a bad guy, but to a boy like Henry, he might seem like a really good guy,
right?
Because he's all about independence and, you know, mischief and getting one over on the adults and saving magic, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's probably my two standout things I'd like to mention. And Anne Marie, after she finishes yawning.
Sorry.
It's late because Emma is on West Coast and we're on East Coast.
It's been a long day around here. Let's see. I don't know. I mean, I love when Belle turned into like Warrior Belle.
Mm-hmm.
That was really fun for me.
Oh, that one episode.
Like she only really got that one episode, but it gave her so much meat and something. She'd really only been the only princess to not have that type of storyline. And I like that the princesses have those storylines, that they're not all floofy.
Yeah.
They don't all need to be floofy.
Yeah, you know, one thing I'm really looking for them to do sometime is to kind of have like a, I don't know, like a Magnificent Seven of the Disney princesses all getting together to kind of be a big group of like...
Well, good, because that's going to bring back Aurora, and we really need Aurora and Mulan back.
Yeah, Aurora, Mulan, Snow, Ariel, Belle, Cinderella.
Cinderella. We need more Cinderella, too.
We do.
I haven't seen her since when?
Wonderland.
She was in the first episode of Wonderland.
There's actually theories, and we haven't seen tonight's mid-season finale yet.
Yeah, we haven't seen the last episode.
But there was theories that Cinderella is the Red Queen's sister.
Really?
We talked about it.
Oh, yeah, we did. That was like when Cinderella showed up, though, wasn't it?
No.
Oh, no, that was later because of the scene with the Red Queen's mom.
Yeah.
So I think
that would be cool. Mm-hmm. Really like the Red Queen, by the way. Completely unrelated. I'm not sure if I actually ever answered your question, but I tried.
Well, and I was even thinking more, you know, the big arcs like Emma struggling to deal with the fact that everything around her suddenly turned into a magical world. And not only does she have parents, they're Snow White and Prince Charming, and they're the same age as she is.
Well, yeah.
And,
it's like she hasn't really even gotten a breather to deal with all that
stuff. Yeah, she really hasn't. Like she whined about this week, she doesn't get a day off. And she needs a day off. Because
it was basically she believed in magic, she broke the curse, the Wraith sent her to the Enchanted Forest, she came back, someone stole her son, and she went to Neverland.
And we're
After traveling to New York with Rumpelstiltskin to go get Balefire.
Who turned out to be...
And carjacking Captain... the Jolly Roger to make it back to Storybrooke.
That's true.
And then boom, and then the events of this season. Yeah. Like has she slept?
I always wonder that. They don't sleep.
Yeah.
They don't sleep.
Especially this season because it's been like,
well,
you know,
Neverland.
That's the thing with Neverland. It's the end of one episode happens, and then moments later in story time, the next episode starts.
Right.
So it's like there's never any real break.
Right. There was like one scene where we saw people sleeping because
she was awake. Talking to pants.
Yes. You weren't watching. she just never sleeps.
Yeah. That's her real superpower. It's not being able to tell when people lie. It's that she never has to sleep.
Oh, I think they need to let the superpower die. I really do.
Well, it's
well, I don't think they're using it that well.
It's always been super inconsistent anyway. I'm guessing it was probably just like a slight indication of her magic via clairvoyance or something like that but nothing major. And now that she's actually tapping into the real stuff, they're probably not going to come back to it.
That's actually
something I've wondered. Has anyone really sat down and talked to Henry about the fact that now all three of his parents are basically magicians? I mean, Neil's off doing the blood magic stuff.
I was about to say, he only does blood magic.
For now,
he probably has.
Well, actually, he took to that so quickly. I almost wonder if he got up to some sort of magic mischief in Wonderland, you know?
You mean Neverland?
Neverland.
So many lands!
Single land in that hat.
Oh, the hat.
But, I kind of wonder if... maybe he might have picked up some magical... Because I know when he was living with Rumpel, he was very resistant to anything magic.
Right.
But maybe, you know, when you're in Neverland, sometimes you have to make some compromises to get by, right?
Henry did that arc, too. I mean, no magic, boom, magic, so...
Yeah. And then you got your body taken over by Pan. Stupid him.
Stupid.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to think of what a 12-year-old was like, and we did stupid things in the name of heroism. Yes. And yep.
I'm over 30, and I do stupid things all the time. That's kind of my stock in trade, stupid things. I'm not going to judge Henry. I'm just going to call him out on it.
Yeah. So you guys obviously do like Doctor Who. You considered doing a podcast, and you actually did one for the 50th.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other things that shows, books, stuff you would say you are big in the fandom that you think might actually kind of play in, like you were saying with the comics even, your enjoyment of Once coming from an enjoyment of comics?
Well, we've talked about trying to bring some of that stuff in, and we've also talked a bit about what to do after Once ends. I know that we are considering maybe doing a kind of like a rundown of either the Fables series, the comic book series, or they just released a Telltale, who won Game of the Year last year for their Walking Dead game, just released a Fables game, the first episode of a Fables game, and I know it's going to be really hard to get Anne-Marie to sit down to read a comic book.
Yep.
But I thought it might be neat for us to sit down and play the game and then kind of, you know, do an episode on it, comparing it to the series and stuff like that. And I also know that next year on Fox, they're going to be doing a procedural series, kind of like a police procedural series called Gordon, about Commissioner Gordon from Batman, kind of like origins of all the villains. You know, you see Batman kind of in the background every once in a while. And since I hate procedurals, but I love Batman, and Anne-Marie loves procedurals, but she's not a huge comic book fan.
But we thought Batman.
We're actually kind of considering maybe doing that as our next podcast. And then that way, you know, assuming that series is successful, we'll be able to kind of, you know, transition over into that once wraps up. Yeah, you know, like I said, best case scenario, 4 to 6 seasons for Once, I'd imagine. I know they'll get a season next year.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
They've been performing pretty well for Sunday nights on ABC. Wonderland, not so much.
Wait, the longer series, even if they manage to pull back out of it, about their 6th, 7th, they start going, we're out of ideas.
Yeah.
So. Well, yeah, I think it's probably a big part about hitting that syndication number too, because once you hit that syndication number, you're in huge profits. Like if you hit the amount of episodes you need for syndication or a network does, they've made their money back on the series. And once it's so close now, it would be silly of them not to do one more season to hit that 100th episode.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. They might have lowered it in recent years. I almost want to say they did. But I don't have any facts to support me. So I'm going to say 100 for now, because I know that used to be right.
So with comic books, do you guys ever think you would get into something like the new Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or maybe even just the Marvel U?
Well, we considered that because Anne-Marie was, if nothing else, a big fan of like the Iron Man movies and stuff.
The one that I saw.
Yeah. But
I don't get to go out often.
But, you know, honestly, I watched the first couple episodes, and I just wasn't really that impressed. Like, I don't know if it was just, like, the low budget, or they were trying to bring in a broader audience to eventually go and see the Marvel movies or something like that.
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner.
But it just wasn't very compelling to me. And obviously, you know, Agent Coulson is great because he's great. That actor's great and everything. But I don't know. I just kind of dropped off after the first couple episodes. I'm waiting for someone on, you know, social media, on Twitter or something, that I really, really trust to say, oh my God, did you see that latest episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? And then I'll go watch that. And if I really like it, I'll catch up on the whole series. But as of now, no plans for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for sure. But yeah, Gordon is a very strong possibility. I'd say, as long as it goes to series, we'll probably be doing a podcast on it. So.
Nice. And in addition
Also, that's an exclusive. We've never even mentioned that on the podcast before. Okay. That we're thinking about that.
Yeah.
Well, that would be an interesting one, because you're right. It's probably close to what Marvel was trying to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in that it's not the super – well, Batman's not super powered, but it's the everyday guy on the street.
Yeah. And from what I've heard, Paul Dini, the guy, one of the co-creators of Batman, the animated series, who transitioned over into writing comics and stuff like that, he was on Fat Man on Batman with Kevin Smith a couple weeks ago, and he said that they're kind of trying to base it off a series from back in the early 2000s called Gotham Central, which was just basically, it was a comic book about the Gotham City Police Department. And that, I mean, it was a great series. It was an award-winning series, and it was a procedural, and I liked it. So, you know,
it's got many things in the positive column.
You know, if he, even, you know, when they're writing the show Bible, they kind of reference that series. I think that bodes well for it, for sure.
Nice. In addition to maybe podcasting about a comic book television, you wrote a comic book style book here recently, too.
Yes.
I actually did read, but I'm really got to, it all kind of ties together, I guess, now that you said you like comic books, because I read it and I saw a lot of the things I liked from once in it. And the comic books make sense too, but I really got to say the magic tricks was what kind of really won it over for me. It was so different to actually have them doing real magic tricks. Is that something you do? Is that something you're a hobby? Or did you, how did you pick that element?
First I'll say the book's called Dog Boy Den of Thieves. You know, pick it up, dogboyadventures.com, plug. But the magic trick things, I'm glad you like that. You know, I don't actually do it myself because I'm a very clumsy man. And, you know, I'm also a really bad liar. So it would be really hard for me to convincingly do magic. But my father actually was a magician. He passed away before I was born. But much like Bronson, the character in the book, my father left me a kind of a little satchel, a little suitcase filled with a bunch of magic tricks. And that was something I had a lot of fun with growing up. And I've also, you know, since then in my adult life, I've also kind of befriended a couple of magicians, a guy named Brian Brushwood, who does a lot of bizarre magic, fire eating, sticking nails through his eyelids, stuff like that. And Andrew Main, who's more of a kind of a cerebral magician. And, you know, so I've kind of got like a really good insight into the magic world from them, which I think informed a lot of the magic stuff in Dog Boy as well. And actually, the first scene where Dog Boy or Bronson goes into the magic shop is actually kind of a recounting of a real experience I had when I lived in Philadelphia. I walked into a magic shop actually doing research for an earlier version of the story, and I was just talking to him. I told him my dad was a magician, and he said you're probably crazy then. And it was kind of insulting, but also kind of
so true.
Yeah, very funny, kind of insulting, kind of insightful in a way too. Especially since I've learned more about the magic community in recent years. But I ended up being a really cool way to kind of introduce the character into Dog Boy's universe.
Yeah, and I did see a lot of the comic book in there too. I think my favorite moment was when he tried to make his first dramatic exit, and she could still see him hiding under the car. that was just too, that's really how that ought to go.
Yeah, there's a lot of it's almost kind of meta commentary like that. There's that, and there's the one bit where he's practicing his voice, and he does the Batman voice, and then he realizes that it would really hurt your voice to talk like this over an extended period of time. But I'm actually working on a new novella based in the same universe called Dog Boy Danger on Liberty Pier, and there's a lot of that meta kind of stuff in there too. So you know, you'll definitely when that comes out, I'll send you a free copy, and you can check it out. And like I said, there's a lot more of it in there. So,
all right, is there anything else you would like to share about the podcast, about Once?
Not too much. I mean, we're going to be going on a hiatus here shortly, a little bit, because, you know, the main Once series is, but we're going to try to do a couple of episodes with guests discussing the first half season in full, and we're going to try and do some episode commentaries too, right, which we did one for the pilot, which went pretty well last year, but then we just never
I was just about to say, our faithful listeners who've been listening since the beginning will know that we've made this promise many, many times.
Yeah, and we hope to one day fulfill it, hopefully over this break.
Yes, but this break, I'm feeling dedicated.
But I mean, besides that, really, just check out the podcast, greetingsfromstorybrooke.com or on iTunes. And if you like us, follow us on Twitter. Twitter's been getting a little less active than it normally is lately. So yeah, follow it over on Twitter at GF Storybrooke. We tweet out every episode, all sorts of fun image macros of one's characters. And if you write us, we definitely, one of us will reply.
More than, yeah.
That was a fun interview, wasn't it? Actually, I don't really know because it's been a couple months ago, so I don't remember too much about it. I remember having a really good time, though, and that we talked a lot about this show. Sorry if some of the theories might have been a little dated, but I believe this was right after the finale. I could be wrong, though. Like I said, I didn't re-listen to it. But, a lot of good times, and you got a little bit more background on the show. I thought this would be a good one to put out right before Once comes back, so Sunday night when people are looking for Once podcast, they can kind of get an idea of what our show's like. But I guess until then, I'll be saying adieu. We would like your reactions both on Wonderland and Once this week. As soon as you finish the episode, just run over to your computer and you can email us at greetingsfromstorybrooke@gmail.com. The Facebook is facebook.com/greetingsfromstorybrooke. You can tweet us on Twitter at GF Storybrooke. And you can always leave a voicemail, which I don't have the number in front of me. Hold on, I'm going to look it up. 424-274-2352. Again, that number is 424-274-2352. And as I said, I'm Bill Meeks. You can follow me on Twitter at Bill Meeks. And my main website is meeksmixmedia.com. All right, well, we'll see you in Storybrooke. I know that's not the way we sign this off. We say, greetings from Storybrooke.